and we are about to get started with the conference call. I have currently placed everybody on mute. Let me start the screen recording as well. Hi, good afternoon, everyone. This is Rajiv Escana for immigration.com, the law office of Rajiv Escana PC. Today is September 27th, Thursday. It's a community conference call we are attending. By attending this call, you do not become our clients, nor we, your lawyers. This call is merely for information purposes. Do remember, your voices are being recorded, so if you wish to keep your identity confidential, you can either not talk or make up a name when you ask a question if you have to announce a name at all. This call will be made publicly available, so act accordingly. That said, we have a set of questions from the Harguan University students. What I intend to do is I want to finish up with all the other questions first and then take whatever time it takes for us to go over the Harguan University questions. I think we should start with Harguan questions in about 30 minutes time, 25 to 30 minutes time, okay? So that said, let me get started first on the questions that have been posted. Might even be less than that. First question on our forums is from California 11. Says, I'm a green card holder. I want to marry someone who's an F1 student visa. Visa is good till 2016, but master's degree will be completed in December 2012. I want to file AOS soon after marriage. Well, to file AOS, the priority date must be current. So keep track of the fact how far is the priority date backed up, because you cannot file AOS unless the PD is current. Okay? Once her AOS is filed, does F1 visa still remain valid? Doubtful, extremely doubtful. In fact, USCIS has said you cannot have AOS and F1 coexisting at the same time. What the consequences of filing an AOS, nobody knows. Does the F1 visa and status get automatically canceled? We don't think so, but no one knows. So it is best to assume that if you file an AOS, she will then be in authorized period of stay, and she should use her EAD for working as well as going to school. Can she leave her education after marriage? Well, if she's out of status, she will not be able to file her AOS within USA unless you are a U.S. citizen. Can we marry outside the U.S. and register our marriage later in the U.S.? I think it will be better for you to marry in U.S. and not have her travel until she gets her green card. She is in another state. Can she take admission in MS in my state and continue her education while we wait for her green card? I don't see any problem with that. I think you need to be very careful with this. I would rather have you become a U.S. citizen and then apply for her if you are close enough. If not, then, just do the I-130 filing while she's still a green card holder. But if she travels or applies for OPT, et cetera, it could become problematic if a green card is pending. Keep this in mind. Okay. Unused expired H-1B transfer. Unused expired H-1B transfer. I had an H-1B approval through Company A, and it was valid from 2007 through 2010. Now I never used it. I want to use it through Company B, who wants to file a transfer. So the question is, can I transfer? The answer is yes. There is something called remainder option. Remainder option. So you will have only 3 years left on the 6 years of your H-1. If you want to be exempt from the H-1 quota. So you can certainly try the remainder option. I'm not quite sure how precisely it works in cases where you are not currently in the H-1 status or H-1 period, because that period expired in 2010. I think remainder option should apply, and you should be able to get H-1 for 3 years without being subject to the quota. Okay? How long will it take? Depends. If you file premium processing, it'll be pretty quick. Clause, I just told you, remainder option. What are the chances of rejection? No more than anybody else. what is my status on October 1st? This person has Kiran actually has an interesting situation. He or she has this situation where L1 and H1 are both approved effective October 1st. So what will be my status on October 1st? I don't know. I don't think anybody can tell you that. Okay? Some people will say whatever was approved last would be your status. Some others would say no. I would suspect that whatever was approved last would be your status is a good rule to follow. If you want to be 100% sure, travel outside and come back using H1 or L1 visa stamping, and you, of course, have to go get it, whichever one is more convenient. But typically, under USCIS guidelines, or at least not guidelines, they're thinking, they call it the last action rule. Now, interestingly, some of the more senior lawyers that I've spoken with within USCIS have never quite understood where this last action rule comes from, but the idea is whatever is approved last is your status. What should you do? Re-enter on visa stamp. Also double-check with USCIS customer service. Make a note of what they say. I think you'll be fine with an L1 as well. Janena is a Brazilian citizen, has a relationship with a U.S. citizen for 7 years. They go home to Brazil, and they come to USA on a tourist visa. Entered USA on March 8th, married on June 29th. Should I do a K-1? Well, you can't do a K-1 once you're married. You can do a K-3, but not a K-1. And your husband must file a Form I-130. I think it'll be a good idea for you folks to have at least a consultation with a lawyer wherever you are. Talk with an immigration lawyer and figure out the details of what you need to do. There's nothing to worry about. This is quite manageable. Okay? Typically, the way I would recommend is you can file I-130 and 485 at the same time, the whole package. There's a bunch of things that go with it. And you get your work authorization within 90 days. But don't travel if you have been out of status. I'm not going to get into the details of out of status and unlawful presence. But if you've been out of status, it's best not to travel until you actually get your green card, which should be pretty quick, usually within a year. Within a few months also, maybe. Okay? Basque H-1B employer address change. So what has happened is that he continues working for the client for which the LCA is properly approved, but his company has changed its location. Okay? Typically, in these situations, Department of Labor suggests that the company should amend the LCA to show the address of the company has changed. There is no law on this issue. I think an LCA amendment should be seriously considered. Okay? Because the location of the employment has not changed, I'm not concerned about H-1 amendment. Just a question says, moonwalking on EAD. Okay. I have applied for 485. And I have my EAD. Company has also applied for H-1 extension. It is approved. So you want to work part-time as faculty in an educational institute. Question is, if I start using my EAD part-time, does my H-1B also go away? The answer is yes, it goes to sleep. You'll have to use EAD for both jobs. You cannot use EAD for one and H-1 for the other. Okay? So, but if you wanted to wake up your H-1 at some time in the future and the H-1 is still valid, all you would need to do is re-enter USA on an H-1 visa stamp and you're back on H-1. So when you start using EAD, your H-1 kind of goes to sleep. Okay? You read in my blogs that for 3+2 education pattern, there can be a problem even during EB2, even during 485. I have a 3-year bachelor's degree and 3 years master's degree, both from universities. It doesn't look like you should have any risk. If you have 2 years of experience, the 3+3 pattern like a bachelor's in computer science, an MCA from a university, is well recognized. So I don't think that should be a problem. Carolina Parent says, I am a derivative. My parent has an asylum application that's still pending, but I've got my green card approved. Can I file for my naturalization? And my answer to them would be, because my knowledge of asylum laws is so limited, I don't want to comment. But generally speaking, for example, in an employment or a business-based case, when the primary has not been approved and the derivative has been approved, it is always questionable. At the citizenship stage, they could hold your application pending until a decision has been reached on your parents' application. However, you should check with somebody who practices in the asylum area. Okay? So in my opinion, it will be kept pending if you file for naturalization, but it's not illegal to do so. Next question is from Indus IMM. I-485 filed without I-140 amendment. See, I don't understand this. I read this question this morning. When there is a corporate restructuring, and even if there's a success in an interest situation, an I-140 amendment should have been filed. I am not quite sure why your lawyers are saying an I-140 amendment is not needed. Okay? So an I-140 amendment, in my view, should have been filed. At this point, I'm not sure why your lawyers are saying it doesn't need to be filed. Maybe they have some information that I don't about the corporate restructuring. I think an I-140 amendment should have been filed. Okay. The number on the I-94 is not an issue, because when you have an H-1 extension pending, extension, not change of status, you're allowed to travel, so it's not a big deal. EDNA has the wrong name for mom on the birth certificate. EDNA, these tend to be relatively minor issues. Okay? So you go ahead and apply for her green card. Okay? Apply for her green card, and typically in the paperwork, there is a column for things like all other names used. You can put the different spellings of your names in those columns. Okay? So just because there was a little misspelling in the name, I don't think you should have a problem. And I saw what the misspelling is. This is a fairly common problem, and it should be okay. You should be able to correct it. If push comes to shove, you can always tell USCIS, all right, do our DNA testing if you don't believe that we are related to each other. Okay? Next question is Mr. Solo. New job, H-1 and EAD. Oh, yes, you had also posted on immigration.com. I'm currently working for a MNC company. I do not know what MNC means, but let's say a company on H-1, seventh year, who sponsored my green card prior to January 2010. You have a valid EAD, which expires in 6 months. 45, of course, has been filed, remains pending for more than 180 days. Now, the question is about AC-21, so I want to change jobs. My current job role is X with a base salary of 86K. Green card was applied for a future job Y with a future base salary of 110K. Can I join a new job with a similar job role, but the job title is changed, and I have a new base of 115? See, 110 and 115 are not that far away. But your job Y, which is your future green card job, must be same or similar to the job you want to take. Okay? What you should do is, first of all, read all the material I have on my blog on AC-21. We've got a lot of stuff there. We have videos, we have audio, we have written material. Read it all. Okay? Then you should have your lawyers assess whether the position Y, the 110,000 position, and the 115 are same or similar. Only then you should move. Hector789 wants to know, I got my green card in 2007. I moved twice after that. I did not update my address with USCIS. Now I have applied for citizenship and completed fingerprinting. One second. think I'm having some issues with some technical issues with my call management. Give me one second. Let me see if it's been resolved. Okay, looks like it's resolved. Very good. Going back to got my green card, moved twice. I did not update my address. Is this going to be a problem during interview? I think you have also written to me. I got an email with exactly the same kind of situation, asking for a paid consultation. And I have told my office to go ahead and set up a call for you. And what I'll do is, before I talk with you, I will review the law on AR-11. I think AR-11, failure to file AR-11 requires some amount of intent of some kind. In other words, there should be some intent to misuse. If you intentionally fail to file AR-11, only then you've got a problem. If you do it by mistake, I don't think it's going to be any big issue for your citizenship. But I have to confirm that, okay? And if we are doing a paid consultation, I will confirm that for you. You should also be able to find this, find out an answer to this question. Contact your congressman, okay? Tell them to find out from USCIS whether this is going to be a big problem, okay? I don't think so. I think you'll be fine. SK000US wants to know, sponsored my husband, was denied due to misrepresentation. Ma'am, the problem is waiver, new waiver, old waiver, these are issues that are quite complicated. It is very difficult for me to give you any kind of meaningful guidance without knowing a whole lot about what the misrepresentation was, you know, what kind of documentation was sent over, what kind of disqualification was applied. So, you know, there's a lot more to it than just saying misrepresentation. I would want you to have a detailed consultation with a second lawyer. You already have a lawyer, but get yourself another second opinion just to make sure that you are getting the right kind of information. And the better thing you can do is talk with a lawyer locally where you are and have and speak with a lawyer who does deportation cases, because there is a lot of that involved in these kind of waivers. So do a second consultation. That's what I would recommend. Hargon University, I'm going to postpone to the end of this call. Another 10, 15 minutes, we should be attending to Hargon University, boys and girls. Next question is from GJ Moran 15. Filed a petition for my dad. It was approved. Now, they want to do an affidavit of support. Well, first of all, I think you should have, if you are making only $7,000, you should have a joint sponsor. And read the form I-864. It tells you exactly what you need to do for a joint sponsor. So combine your mother's income. And it doesn't have to be actually a relative. Anybody can be a co-sponsor. Okay, so mother can be a co-sponsor. Anybody can be a co-sponsor. Okay? So look at the form I-864 instructions. It tells you exactly what you need to file. I don't remember off the top of my head, but I know that the instructions are quite clear. Okay, you should tell the truth in every possible way in any government filings. If you are making $7,000, you should put down $7,000. Don't put down zero. Okay? That's the right thing to do. Next question, again from Hargwan University. I'll get to that in a second. And the last question for the day is Mohan KK, two I-140s approved, worked for the same company. Okay? Let's see. Oh, I see. So what is happening is after we port his priority date from EB3 to EB2, it becomes current from October. So he wants to know, what do I do to expedite? There is really not much you can do to expedite. Can you help me do the inquiry? Why do you want to pay us when you can do the same thing or your lawyer can do the same thing? There really isn't much value we can bring to you, much though we would like to, other than, you know, personal attention. But that's not going to change anything. Okay? So what I've done is I have another client. Actually, this morning I had a call with him. Very similar situation. His case is pending in Texas. So he even went for an AC-21 interview. He went for the interview, and he said he has some doubt if the officer had noticed the fact that he has ported his EB-3 priority date to EB-2. So what I did was I told my colleague who's handling the case, I said, you know what, let's do this, Mark. Send a letter to USCIS Texas saying that, please note that he is entitled to his priority date from the old case. So on October 1st, he becomes current. We are not certain that you've noticed that. Second, I said, do a customer service call and open a case with them also just to make sure. And then if it doesn't work out in a couple of months, open an ombudsman's case. That's what I would say you do. Okay, I am done with all the questions that were there. I'm going to go back to follow-up questions or any new questions other than Harguan University. Once I'm done with those, then I'm going to attend. Everybody else can hang up. They want to stay on. That's fine. I want to attend only Harguan University issues. Okay? And also, I think one or two people from NATA, the North American Telugu Association, had indicated they might grace us with their presence. So we'll check if they are here as well. But for now, let me just take on any questions other than Harguan University questions. If you have any question, press 5-star on your phone. Press 5-star on your phone. No Harguan University, everybody else. Press 5-star. I so far don't see any hands up. Looks like no questions so far. 5-star. I still don't see any hands up. It looks like it's going to be mostly Harguan. Let's again double check. Anybody has any questions other than Harguan, press 5-star. One question, two questions, three questions, four questions, five questions, six questions, seven questions, eight questions, nine questions, 10 questions, okay? All right, 10 different people have raised their hands. Let's get started and see how many. Oh, what happened? I lost them. I don't understand this. Let's try again. There were 10 hands up a moment ago, and then, okay, it's back. Wow, I'm having some real dumb technical issues here. Area code 913. Area code 913, go ahead, please. No, I'm still having trouble. Okay, I think I'm going to need to get another machine. Bear with me a moment, folks. Okay, let me go grab another computer. This one is giving me trouble. So, okay. I will start unmuting people once I have another machine operational. That will take me about a minute more. So bear with me. Area code 913, can you hear me? Area code 913. How about area code 301? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, 1 second.
Area code 310.
Hello?
Is it 301 or 310?
That's what I meant, I'm sorry. 301. Just give me 1 second.
Okay.
Area code 301. Go ahead, please. How can I help?
This is Mr. Solo, MRSOLO. I asked you the question about the job transfer for the pay scale thing.
The AC21 issue?
Yeah.
Okay.
My question is does money, does the job specification matter, or is the amount I get paid also gets considered in it, is my
salary
question.
Salary does matter, but 5,000 is not a big difference.
So how much would you think is good difference? 20,000 is okay?
You mean 20,000 more salary, is it okay? Is that what you're asking me?
Yeah.
No, if the salary difference is too much, it can be a problem.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. If the salary difference is about 20,000 more, is it a problem?
There are too many variables for me to give you a good answer. It depends. Let's say the first job was for Arkansas. The second job is for California. Even 50,000 would be okay. Okay? So it depends. There are too many variables. You need to get a legal opinion on all these things. Not something I can tell you in general.
Okay. Got you, sir. Thank you.
Right? Good luck.
Yep.
Once again, area code 913.
Hi there, Devdi.
Anji, hello. How are you, ma'am?
I'm good. I was just on mute and I didn't realize when I was replying to your message. Anyways, I'm A. Bajaj. I had posted some questions for you through other channels, and I have follow-up questions for you. You will realize when I start giving more information to you. So Actually, I have two questions, one for my husband and one for myself. My husband is on L1, which has expired on July 19th this year.
Okay.
And his company has filed for his L1 extension, which is good only until yesterday. It has not been approved yet. It's still in RFE status, to which they are going to reply in a day or two.
Okay.
Now he has got his H-1B approved with I-94. Which is valid from October 1st. So I just wanted to confirm with you whether he is good to stay, whether his status changes to H-1B from October 1st without going out of U.S. or he has to go out and get it activated.
Technically, he should not be okay because there's a gap between the L-1 and the H-1. However, this is such a small period. My guess is USCIS is not going to make a big issue of it. But I do not know.
Okay, sure. The second question is for me. My L2 also expired in the same period, July 2012. I-94 has expired. L2 extension has been filed, which is still in RFE status.
Okay.
And my H-1B has been approved a few weeks back, but I did not get the I-94. It has been indicated that I need to go to the Mumbai consulate and then get it stamped over there. But right now, I have started the 9th month of my pregnancy, and it's really not a great idea to go out. So I'm not sure what options do I have.
The good news is, if as long as your stay is less than 180 days from the date of your I-94 expiration. When did your I-94 expire?
July 19th.
Okay. As long as your stay in USA is less than 180 days after July, you're not going to have any permanent problems.
Okay.
Okay. So, but it's not a good idea. However, I don't see any options here.
Right.
Okay. I think you're going
to... if my husband's company applies for my H-4 meanwhile... Like suppose they applied for my H-4 yesterday. Am I good to stay here?
No. Once you have started accruing unlawful presence, it does not get stopped by a subsequent application. You should still keep that 180-day period in mind. Of course, USCIS has the discretion and the authority to give you your H-4 within USA if they want to. You can try.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay.
All right.
I'm not,
if I consider for the 180 days from July, it would be over soon. But right now, I'm not in a position to travel.
How will it be open soon? We are only in September.
Sorry.
6 months.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Sure. Okay. All right, I got to really go on. Guys, keep your questions short, really, because I want to attend to the Hargwan University students. They have some issues.
Thank you so much, sir.
Okay. Good luck.
Thank you.
Bye. Okay. Area code 415. Go ahead, please. 415.
Hi. This is Indus M. I was talking about. The amendment that was not filed for I-140. And this is not just me, and this is like a bunch of our people where they just say you don't need, and we just keep asking.
Because there is a memorandum from USCIS which clearly says that you have to file an amendment.
True. I personally have read that, and I tried to convince them, but they said like, and there's like a bunch of them, and we just don't want to do it. And now, even if I convince them to do it, is it too late to do an amendment once now they filed the 485 and everything?
It should not be too late. Go ahead and get it done.
And if not, I mean, if they still try to not do it, if I do like a AC-21 and move to somebody else, and, you know, would that old? I mean, it's been past 180 days, and now would that old 140?
The problem is, the 485 was filed on a faulty I-140. That's my problem.
Right. So now, I mean, it was approved already. It is not, it was, I know the question was it should be approvable, and it's already approved. You know, now that we move to new AC-21, would they still have to, would they still have a problem with the 485?
I think it's a bad situation that needs to be corrected.
Okay.
The I-140 amendment has been approved, then you can do whatever you want.
Okay. Even though it's 180 days past, now that we have recruited into even with that we have the EAD, made us all move to EAD without H-1 extensions anymore. And I mean, especially this being hanging on with no 140 amendment, and we are staying on EAD. It's really bothering us. I don't know how we would this get, And 140 is something I just cannot go ahead and, amend myself. It's the company who got
to
do it.
You need to tell the employer that this is a problem for all of you guys.
Right, okay. And if not, there is a chance that it can be, like, problematic with 485 and denial also, right?
It can be, definitely.
Okay. And usually the chances are very less that they ignore it.
Chances are small that they'll ignore it.
Okay. And
let me go, unless there's something else coming up. Let me just move along, okay?
Yeah, just one more quick question. Now, if I move to H-1, I come in, now I am already on EAD, and if I have to go on H-1, I can apply for H-1 and just go out and come back on a stamping, right?
Yes, you can.
With a stamp. I just cannot start working on H-1 just by filing getting a receipt notice.
You are not on H-1 currently, you're on EAD. You cannot.
Right. I cannot just go back to H-1 just by going doing a receipt number.
No, you cannot.
I'm taking your time.
No, I have to cut you short because I have a lot of people waiting.
This last one, sir. The I-94 number you said, which is fine, even though, the new one has come with the old I-94 number. In the future, what I-94 number should I use? The old one the last one that I was given, or the old one that's just getting continued?
Last one that was issued.
Okay. Thank you, sir.
Good luck, guys.
At the port of entry. Thank you.
Okay. I still have a good 9-10 questions. I'm going to try to rush through them, guys. Really, you have to be considerate. There's a lot of people waiting. So let's just start. 212, go ahead, please. Area code 212.
Yes, hi.
Hello, sir.
Hello?
Yes, I can hear you.
Okay. Yeah, I have a question related to H-1 extension.
All right.
Let me explain you the case. I'll be quick. I have a 140 approval. I applied for my 7th-year extension before my I-94 expiration, but it got denied in September 2012. and my I-94 expired in March.
Okay,
so now I have 30 days to open, motion to reopen. In this time, I've applied for a new H-1 extension through the same employer.
Stop one second.
Sir.
The 33 days, actually, they give you to file an MTR does not give you any status. Once your I-94 is expired, you have started accruing unlawful presence from the date of the denial of the H-1.
I see.
Okay? Filing an MTR gives you no status to stay or work in USA. Your unlawful presence is going on.
Okay.
Be careful with that. Okay?
I see. Yeah, I think that is related to the question that I'm going to ask you is, I applied for a new H-1 extension from the same employer. Would that be a problem of getting denial because I'm out of status?
It doesn't take away the unlawful presence, running of the unlawful presence.
Okay, because I was under the impression that I have 33 days to apply for MTR. So in that time, I can stay.
That does not give you any kind of status. Appeal, MTR give you no status.
I see.
Okay.
Okay. And also, so if I do, so I have to get out of the country. But if I do get my new H-1 extension applied and approved, based on depending I get I-94 extended or not, can I start working with the same employer or have to get out of the country?
I-94, you're fine.
If I get I-94, I can start working from day one, I get the approval?
Yes, absolutely.
I see. Okay, so you're saying I should get out of the country to
not
rely on MTR?
You need to get together with your lawyers to figure out what is the best strategy.
I see. I'm waiting for my H-1 extension applied premium processing, so hopefully it is before those 30 days. But I am accruing, as you mentioned, I am accruing those unlawful presence.
I got to move on, okay?
Sure, yeah. Thank you.
Guys, I'm sorry to give you the bum rush, but I wanted to deal with all the questions that have been posted, then I wanted to go on to Hargwan, but I guess we'll do the best we can. Hargwan University, guys, just hang on. I'll get to you. If it takes me the rest of the evening to take care of all your issues, I will. So just hang in there. Okay, this is probably a voice over IP call. I don't see any number. You logged in at 12:31 p.m. Eastern Time. Go ahead, say hello. If you're using voice over IP, say hello. Okay. Area code 571. Go ahead, please. Hello,
Mr. Khanna. I posted a question like I'm working for a Indian company like on the L1 visa. So currently I'm on the L1A. So
what
I spent here like around.
What does MNC mean?
It's a multinational company.
Ah, okay.
I'm working on the L1 visa for foreign. Past 3.5 years, I am on the L1. First year, I was on the L1B, and I am now on the L1A. And before that, 1 year in India, I was working as a manager. So initially, like my company, they did not want to apply for my green card. So now, like this April, I applied for my H1B with another employer, and from the 1st October, status is going to be changed with the new employer.
I know your case.
So,
why are you repeating your facts?
Okay. So only question you have with the MNC. So
I had no other question. I already told you what I think. You heard the discussion, right? I said that if both L1 and H1 are effective on October 1st, I think our best guess is whichever was approved last is your status.
Okay, so if that is the status, but because if green card is for the future, can my current employer can still apply in the EB1 category?
They can, in my opinion, yes.
Okay, because still like I was working there as an international manager, so they can apply. And if I have to, like if they ask me to switch back to L1A again, then it again has to go through. Change of status process, like they have to reinitiate like the...
Either change of status or step outside USA and come back again.
Okay.
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 I'm back on L1 visa.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Rajiv.
You're welcome, sir. Okay. We'll have a bunch of questions. All right. I'm doing the best I can, guys. Maybe we should have had a completely separate call for our Gwan students. Okay. Area code 703, go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajinji. This is Sri.
Hello, Sri. How are you?
Good. How are you, sir?
Good, sir. Go ahead.
It's my quick question. I'm on EAD. I'm on H1, but I have EAD filed like 6 months back, 485.
Okay.
My quick question is AC21 is a must if
read
I change
my,
the employer?
Read my blog. There really is no requirement that you must file AC21. But I think in most cases it's a good idea.
Okay. If for every time I am changing the employer, I need to go for AC21.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Should we need to report all the jobs while on EAD, full time, part time, whatever the stuff? ESCS, only full time is sufficient on AC21.
Job has to be full time. I want you to read the entries on my blog and listen to the videos that we have on this. You'll have a much better idea.
Okay. Final question.
Yep.
Future employer should be the same area right now in DC metro area. Should it be in the same metro area or something like I can go anywhere with like a change of salary range and other stuff?
AC21 can be for any employer anywhere in US.
Okay. The salary range should be, as you told earlier, like a 20,000 around, something like that. If it is the same area, same job.
I did not put a number on it. No, sir.
Okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks,
Mahendra ji, I've just unmuted you. You are here, right, Mahendra ji?
Yes, Rajiv ji, I was listening. It was a good conversation going on.
Okay, I'm sorry. We still have to go on. I still have a few calls to answer. So, Hargul,
I have a couple of things, quick thing to ask you. I was listening to this corporate restructure thing. That corporate restructure amendments would apply only if it is a complete takeover and a new company assumes the name, or is it also applicable if the company is bought by somebody else but still runs under the same name, same EIN number and all?
If it's the same EIN, just a change in ownership, everything is fine.
Okay. But what about the address if they move to a new location? It also doesn't. Just send a letter to USCIS should be okay?
When I talked about that, yeah, there is no problem with that. Change in address within the same vicinity is not a big deal. That can always be handled. The problem comes when the EIN number changes or the restructuring involves like going from LLC to C Corp or from
MLC.
That's where things get kind of messy.
Right. Okay.
Okay, by the way, everyone, this is Mahendra Ji from
Nata.
Can you spell that out for me? What is NATA? North American.
You already called before, North American Telugu Association.
Right. So you are here for the Hargwan University call. I'm going to leave you unmuted. Let's just go on to the other 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 calls more that I've got. Guys, please make it very, very quick. We've got 60, 70 people waiting. Okay. Area code 678. Go ahead, please.
Hi, Rajiv. I have a question regarding advanced parole. Like, how long I can stay out of the country in advanced parole?
As long as your job is still being held open by the employer, you can stay outside USA for as long as the advanced parole is valid.
Okay. The reason is, like, I have a Canadian immigration, so I just wanted to go there and, you know, file for my citizenship, but I have to stay in Canada. But my employer is, giving the permission to work from remotely. So, but, like, when I'm traveling in and out of country, like U.S. to Canada, Canada to U.S., so I will be using my advance parole to come inside. So is it okay? Like, my 485 is pending, actually.
Okay, I got it. There should not be any problem because really what we are worried about is the continuity of the job and that you have.
Okay. So if I have continuity in the job and, you know, I can travel without any problem on advance parole, and for means as long as the advance parole is valid.
That is good.
Okay. All right. All right. Thank you.
Okay. Area code 484. Go ahead, please. 484.
Yeah. Hi, Rajiv. I am a dependent applicant. Like, I got my GCEAD in April 2011. And before that, I was an FN student. And I was working on OPT-EAD. Once I got my GCEAD through my husband, I just asked my employer to run my pay stub, like paying complete taxes of the GCEAD. I just want to know whether my FN is still active or service is active.
I don't think that's a safe assumption. Like I said, USCIS has indicated they don't believe that F1 and 485 can coexist.
Yeah, so you mean that my F1 is inactive, right?
Nobody really knows what they do with it. They have never really made that clear. The safe assumption is I am on AOS pending authorized period of stay. I'll be using my AOS EAD for everything.
Yeah, now I'm using my GCEAD itself. Like, I'm asking, like, my payrolls are running completely on GCEAD.
The safest thing is to ignore the F1 altogether.
So do you suggest me to apply H4 change of status?
No. What is the need?
So, yeah, just want to make sure that still, like, I'm out of F1 thing.
Yeah, I don't see any problem with that. I think you're out of F1.
Okay, once the AOS is approved and I'm using it, then F1 is no more active, right?
Approved. If AOS is approved, you have a green card.
No, sorry, EAD. I mean GCEAD.
Well, we believe so because USCIS has said they cannot coexist, but they never said it's automatically going to go away. Nobody really knows.
Okay.
So it is safe to assume that it no longer exists.
Yeah, because I'm not using the OPT-EAD. I asked my payroll to run it like complete. I'm paying complete taxes.
I got it.
So, do you think it's safe?
I that's a very vague question. Do I think it is safe? What does it mean?
It means like, do you want me, like my husband is going to apply his H1 extension to by this month. So, do you want me to add?
Look, you can apply for an H4, but if you are using an EAD, H4 is gone anyway. So what's the point?
Oh, okay. Okay.
Is he also using the EAD or is he using continuing on H1?
He's on H1.
Oh, that's fine. Then. I think you can continue your EAD and he can do his H1. Doesn't matter. He can do parallel.
I can't really endorse that.
because that's what I do with my employees, so, Rajiv.
Mahinderji is not a lawyer.
yeah, I'm not.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Right now, I'm
doing okay? Okay, yeah. Thank you.
Bye-bye. All right, now, let's see how many more we have. 1, 2, 3. Very good. Area code 703. Go ahead, please. 703. Okay. Area code 602. Go ahead, please. And the last one is area code 201. Area code 201. Okay. 201.
Hello.
How about 703?
Hi. Hello?
I think it's 201.
Okay, 201. Hello,
Rajiv. Yeah, one second. Let me get the 201 first. Go ahead, please.
Okay. Hi, Rajiv. Rajiv, basic small question was, you know, we came to know last month about this new bulletin, which moved the EB2 dates back to 2004. So we basically read some document which had, you know, demand numbers and stuff, and it was totally bizarre and weird that date would move to 2004, where most of the 2008 guys have already received the green card. So what does that imply, and what do you think,
well,
you know, are these demands?
My office is preparing a write-up on this. I should be able to give you a presentation within a couple of weeks.
Within a couple of weeks?
Yeah. So sit tight.
Okay.
I will describe the whole process for you guys.
Okay. Yeah, because I think I was hearing your last conversation. Somebody else also asked the same question.
I haven't had a chance to go over it.
Okay, sir. We will be eagerly waiting for to see that analysis, actually. So
no problem.
Thank you very much. Yeah.
I will have it out for you, okay?
Sure.
All right. 201 is done. 703, go ahead, please, sir.
Hello, Rajiv. So a quick question. The last question that I, wrote you, I have two I-140s, approved and two I-485s pending, right? Now, my priorities is current. Long time back in the October 1 also it will be current. So, we have opened many, service tickets. We have wrote them letters, but nothing is happening. I filed the second I-485, just to make sure that, they look at that.
One second.
Sure.
Until the priority date is current, nothing is going to happen.
Okay.
October 1st onwards, if your priority date is current and in 4, 5, 6 months you don't have an approval, you've got a problem.
Okay.
But every time the priority date slips back, don't expect anything to happen.
Okay.
So really, your pendency doesn't begin to count until your PD becomes current.
Right. Okay, Rajiv. So other one small question I have is that, the 485 which was pending for the EB3 process, then the I-140 for the EB2 got approved and we filed the second I-485. Now, when we got the I-485 receipt, the employment category, preference category still says EB3. I don't know why. I mean, the lawyer opened, one or two services for that
I'm
also.
This will be my last comment, guys. I'm not answering any more questions. I still see a couple of hands up again from the questions I've already answered. I won't be able to answer them. I've got to move on. This is my last comment. Everybody who's not a Hargoan University student, we are done for today. We'll be back again in 2 weeks, okay? My last comment to you, sir, is this. USCIS runs database inquiries, they call them sweeps, several times a month, and they automatically give you the earliest priority date which is available to you. No matter what he says, it should not affect the fact if you're entitled to an earlier date, they will give it to you automatically. You want to be sure, you can always send them a letter about it.
Okay.
Okay?
Okay, Rajiv. Yeah, that sounds good then.
I'm going to get started with the Hargoan University now. So I want everybody else to excuse me for this time. I will not be able to take follow-up questions. So we are going to go on to Hargoan University now. Let me just give me 1 second. Let me get this thing a little organized. Okay. All right. The two gentlemen who've been coordinating with me from Hargoan University, both of you, can you press 5-star on your phone, please? Both of you guys, 5-star. The two guys who've been emailing me back and forth, I've got one hand up. Press 5-star. Okay. Well, as long as I've got one of you guys here. Can you hear me, sir?
Hello, Rajiji. Good morning. Anil here.
Anji, good. Okay. Good morning. Good afternoon, actually. Okay. So here's what I'm going to do. I am going to start by answering your questions. And then I have one question posted by a Hargoan University student. I also wanted, time permits and everybody has time, to go over the documents that were in court. Okay? I've been talking with David, I forgot the last name, of the lawyer who represented and continues to represent the Hargoan University. We only had a couple of brief exchanges of email, but he did indicate that he was going to be in D.C. and he wanted to get together. I have no problem speaking with him to understand where the university is coming from. So Is it okay if I start with your questions first, or do you want me to go over the court documents and all first? What would you prefer?
Well, Rajeshji, I think we all read, most of us at least know we read the court document, the 52-page document which was sent out to us. Now that, you know, you spoke to our university attorney, I would like to brief us, you know, I mean, where we are standing and how the proceeding is going.
Okay, well, let me take 2 seconds to explain to you what the court ruling is. What happened?
Okay.
First thing was that, what is that gentleman's name? Is it Zeng? What is his name?
Is it attorney? What are we talking about?
The attorney, the owner slash the principal DSO.
Wong.
So Mr. Wong was criminally indicted. There is an indictment pending against him. An indictment simply means that the government is accusing him of certain crimes which involve a fraudulent documentation, as well as issuing improper I-20s, etc. Okay? Remember, indictments can be revised. You can have something called superseding indictments. So in the first indictment, they have 2 counts. In the next one, they can have 200 counts. And then another one, they can have 2,000 counts. So indictments, I'm not a criminal defense attorney, but I know enough, having worked with enough criminal defense lawyers, that I know this is the way the system works. So typically the government wants to go in and start looking over his paperwork and see what else they can hang on him. Okay? The question that I asked David, and again, I forgot his last name. I think it's Floss or something like that. But David, the question I asked him, first question was, I said, I have looked at the court documents. It appears that there's nothing pending. The TRO that you had applied for has been dismissed. So, you know, where do we stand in terms of the court proceedings? He came back and said, even though the TRO was dismissed, because of the TRO filing, we now have been restored the full SEVP status, and, you know, we've got our PDSO restored, so we are back in action. And I then said, I would like to understand. You say that, you know, the SEVP matters have been resolved. How about the ICE problem? And they said they are still working with the ICE issue and expect to have it resolved because, in their opinion, ICE has misconstrued or misunderstood much of the documentation. So now that doesn't give me a whole lot to go with. I understand that they have their clients to protect, and I understand where I stand. Even though you are not my clients, none of you are my clients, I'm watching for your interest to the best of my ability. I have absolutely no interest in protecting the university, and I am sure David understands that. My interest is only that the students shouldn't get hurt. Okay? So if they do talk with me, I will be talking with them, questioning them on behalf of the students as best as I can. That's where we stand. We don't know enough to make a sound judgment about what is going to happen in this case. In any case, legal proceedings are difficult to predict. Nevertheless, in this case, since our information is singularly lacking, I don't know what they have responded, what they have told the ICE in response to their notice to revoke the I-17. So I don't know what they have submitted. If we do meet with David, I will ask him for more information, and I'm not sure how much the university wants to share with us. Okay? So with that said, do you have any other questions on this, or should I jump into your questions to me?
Rajeshji, I think you can jump on, please.
Okay. So let me start with the questions that you had sent to us, and these are all good questions. Let's see. Where do you see us standing at this point of time? That's your first question. Well, right now, your I-20s are still good. Your OPTs and CPTs are still good. Government itself has said that everything is still good. How long is it good for? That's something debatable. Are you clear so far?
Yes.
Okay. Next question is, and by the way, guys, all the students, once I'm done with all this question-answer process and done answering the questions that have been posted, we can open the call for a little bit of time for any follow-up questions you might have. If you want me to do an individual question session with the students, get in touch with these two gentlemen who've been in touch with me. I don't want to be inundated with the emails because that becomes very unmanageable. So let's just all get together and try to coordinate things through two or three people that you have decided on. Okay. So, what would be the next proceeding from ICE? Well, remember, the proceeding against Mr. Wong are going on in the criminal court. They are going to go on. ICE is right now looking at their response to their earlier notice. Okay? The way the regulations are framed, it appears to me, and I confess I haven't spent hours upon hours going over the regulations. I just took a very cursory look at them. It looks like they cannot take away the I-17. They cannot take away the I-17, which is the university's right to issue F-1s, etc., unless they have gone through the entire consideration of the response, and then if an appeal is filed, the appeal, except where criminal activity is being charged. So, and I think David's argument was, if I remember correctly, that the university is not charged with any criminal wrongdoing. The university itself is not. Okay? So, once again, typically, government cannot take away I-20s, etc., until they've gone through the notice, the response, and then after that an appeal, which can take many, many months. Okay? Except where there is criminal activity. So, are they going to press their criminal activity point and try to short-circuit and make the decision more quick in this case? We don't know.
Okay.
Okay. I think what we should do, and this is what I've been saying from day one, we should prepare a short letter to ICE, which should say, you know what, we are the university students. We are stuck in this rock and hard place. We don't know what we should be doing, even though your official position is continue doing your CPT, continue doing your OPT, but if you want to change, then change. If you have violated status, leave within a week. Okay, all that we understand. But can you tell us that you will at least give us 3 months, 4 months, or a semester to change status if you take away the university's certification? Because anything less than that leaves us in a bad place because no good schools will take you mid-semester. You have to give us enough time to find another school. I think we should write this letter.
Yeah, so Rajiji, on this note, let me just give you a little bit of information. All the students here, you know, we have prepared a draft, which is about 3 pages as to, you know, what our concerns are and what we are, you know, seeking help. So as you were asking us, you know, to make up a letter from each student, we have done that, and we do have them with us, you know, a single a transcript, you know, where everyone of us are on the same page. I mean, we have documented a 3-page thing, you know, which we are trying to circulate everywhere. I mean, when I say everywhere, it's to the consulate generals or to, you know, the Indian government or to any other, you know, wherever required. So if this is going to be of help, please let us know.
I will tell you one thing. Let me take care of that letter from the ICE perspective.
Okay.
If afterwards you want to send it to other people, and the only person I can think of who's been singularly helpful in Tri-Valley University and other cases was Rajagopal.
Lagarapati.
Lagarapati, Rajagopal Lagarapati. He was a very helpful man. Mahindra ji, what did you think?
Yeah, he is good. We can touch base. If that is required, we can touch base this federal government in India again. No problem.
We will take care of, we'll review your letter. If you want us to put it on our letterhead, we will do that. You want to send it by yourself, that's perfectly fine. We will.
I think we will send a letter to you, and then, you know, probably you could request.
We'll work it over, and we'll show you what we are thinking of sending. And once you all approve it, we will send it to ICE. But as far as reach out to Indian community, Indian leaders, etc. is concerned, go to TANA. They will be able to better help you with that. I'm sorry, NATA. North America.
NATA, okay. And,
I'm very confused.
Right. And Rajiv, any particular person in NATA or Mahindraji? You know, if you
Mahindraji is here, no? Mahindraji is on the phone with me.
Yeah, yeah. You can, we can work on it based on once the letter is ready, the content is ready, we can also put it on NATA letterhead. And we can send an appeal through NATA, and we can contact the NRI minister both in, I think most of the students are again from Hyderabad, the Telugu people, so we are very concerned. And we can talk to the, both the state government and central government in India, and get a letter from them too. And this, we have this minister, he's a very nice guy at the U.S. consulate in U.S. embassy for the community affairs, and we can also rope him in, and through him we can have the ambassador and everybody look into this. But let us see if, what effort we need to put.
Sure. Okay. So I think, so your question was, what should be the, what could be the next proceeding? What should we be doing? What are the potential issues students might face? My only concern is students being left in a place where they don't have status. Okay? So if we can get ICE to give us 3, 4, 5, 6 months of status, if and when the university certification is taken away, that would put us in a nice place.
Okay.
It wouldn't put us in a perfect place, but it would put us in a place where at least we are not being stuck with a position where we have absolutely no defense, and after spending thousands of dollars, we just have to leave USA and may not be able to come back.
Right. So, Rajiji, again on this, can we send out a letter? I mean, on your letter, can we send out a letter to ICE or related
that's what I'm planning
that,
to do.
You know, we need more time.
That's what I'm planning to do. We should at least get something on the record that says, look, you know, this is something you need to consider. You are the policy makers. Because these guys really are the ones who decide everything. And if we feel that we're not going to get enough action from them, then maybe we can take it somewhere else. But for now, the next letter should be to ICE. It should be done within a week or 8, 9, 10 days at the most.
So, Rajiji, do you need any help from us? I mean, you want me to draft anything, or you can take it from
just
your end?
After send it to me, then I will have it put in proper words.
Okay, sure. Thank you.
Don't worry about what you are doing. Send it all to me. CC Mahindraji. Mahindraji, what is your email address that you want to use?
Yeah, that's what I want to give to these folks. If they need to reach me, it is Musuku, my last name, M-U-S, as in Sam, U-K-U, at N, as in Nancy, I-H-A-K-I.com. Musuku at Nihaki.com.
Nihaki.com. And if you didn't get that email address, that's fine. Just forward it to me. I'll send it to Mahindraji.
Sure.
Okay, so we are doing the ICE letter. Potential issue, most important one, is loss of status. Of course, you could even have a lawsuit against the university. Okay, I'm going to come to that after a minute or two, after I've gone through all the other questions. Next is, during the tenure, should OPT and OPT extensions still be processed? And the answer is, it appears that they will be.
Yeah, I've got an update, Rajiv, yesterday saying that, you know, a couple of them got their OPTs extended.
Yes.
Even before this issue happened.
Right. So right now we are
happened,
with that.
A couple of them got their extension. But I'm only concerned about extensions from the California Center, because I know a couple of them got from the Texas Center, even, you know, during this process and then even before that. But I haven't heard of anyone getting from the California Center. So I'm a little bit, you know, worried about that part. And I want to see someone getting approved so that, you know, we'll have some, you know, relief.
Why don't you jot that down as a question I can take up with David?
Okay,
jot
sure.
It down. Some of the things I can talk with David about.
Okay, sure.
Okay, David, you know, what can you do for the students who get stuck with this kind of a situation?
I did speak to him, Rajiv Ji. I met him last week. I did speak to him about it, and he was pretty cool. He said, yeah, you all, everything is fine now. Everything remains the same. It's just that, you know, the case is going behind us, but you should get everything approved. If not, you know, you can go get your intermediates if you're applying for the first OPD, and then if you are on extension, you know, you always have those 180 days, you know, a grace period. So he says everything should be working out. You know, there's nothing much to worry about. That's what he was into.
Well, you know, my concern is there's a conflict of interest here. That's why I'm a little surprised that they would offer to also file a lawsuit on behalf of the students, because there's a potential conflict of interest here. When David gets stuck with a situation where something he knows or says that can harm his existing client, but it could help his future clients, which is the students, I don't see how he can represent both sides. Okay.
But,
I think that
is it required to go for lawsuit, Rajivji, at this point?
No, it's not required. I'm going to get into that.
So why is he touching that subject?
I don't even know what he's thinking. But in all fairness,
yeah,
since he's not here, and I didn't even invite him because I wanted to talk with the students first, I really would want to know his side of what he's thinking before we can make an informed judgment. And, of course, he's welcome to join us. If we decide to do another call, we can invite him and say, okay, how can you help us? And our situation,
yeah, but my suggestion would be, guys, don't just get rushed. Rajuji is the best person who can protect our interests. So even not even a single person of you, just don't make a rush and jump on anything to do anything, because, you know, just put Rajuji in loop, and through me and Ata, we can be in loop and help you guys out. But, you know, don't think of lawsuits, all those things, when it's not necessary.
Not unless you understand. Until we understand what is being
unless we understand the thing.
His point of view in lawsuit was, you know, first of all, he said, you know, students, everyone are willing to file the lawsuit, you know, which he wants to do. The reason being, if he finds a lawsuit, then he said, you know, we'll get definitely an additional grace period, you know, at least for 180 days or so, you know, they would not touch you. I mean, at least they will be reviewing that. That's the first thing. And the second thing, lawsuit, he wants to file, the reason being, on the 17th, or 18th, you know, they revoked our SCVP certificate. I mean, what do you call the termination of our service records.
I'm gonna have a conversation with him, because look.
Yeah, I think that would be.
To be honest with you, and I don't mean to downgrade anybody's skills or understanding. To me, it was very odd. If you look at the order that denied the TRO. The basic ground for denial of the TRO is, guys, how can you file a TRO without filing a complaint? After all, the idea is, how can you build a second floor without building a first floor?
Correct.
So the TRO that they have filed without filing a complaint. That makes no sense to me. And so it got dismissed because there was no complaint. Now, agreed, it did give them the leverage that ICE knows that, you know, these guys are going to take them to court, so they are a little bit more careful. But that does not give me a lot of confidence in what the lawyers are doing. I'll be honest. And again, with all due respect to David and the university's team, I really don't know what they are doing. Maybe they have a strategy for it, which I don't understand. Maybe they can explain it to me. To me, it looked like a very hastily filed action which did not comply with some of the very basic requirements of the law. Okay? So, again, I could be wrong. I'm always willing to learn. But remember, guys...
Yeah, he wanted to put forward what students faced through, you know, that during those 2 or 3 periods, because some of them, they have resigned their jobs and some of them moved to other university and they have to pay the fees again.
Yeah, but, you know, when he's representing the university through the students' agony, it should not become that university gets bailed out. So we should be careful in what
we do. I think maybe
he himself will not represent, not authorized recommendation.
Yeah.
I would like to.
I think Rajiv, you should talk to him. Yeah. If you talk to him, then you'll get a clear.
Remember, we have no irons in this fire. We have no dogs in this fight. I am not interested in making a single penny from anybody. All I want to do is make sure you guys go in the right direction. So let's wait, and until we had a conversation with David, I would prefer it to be an open conversation where two or three people from the student's body are there. We can do a conference call with him, try to understand what the university is thinking. If the university wants to come on the phone, that's even better. We can understand. If we can work together, fine. If not, our interest, only we can protect, nobody else.
Yeah, so Rajesh, if you want to get in touch with university for some reason, you know, I can arrange that meeting with the higher officials. I'm in touch with them.
Let's just get to that. We'll get to the action items. Let me finish the questions first.
Okay.
Fifth question, for the above lawsuit, do we need an agreement? Sixth, what should we do about pressuring, et cetera? Okay. The bill that you talk about, number eight item, which is H.R. 3120, has that bill been passed into law? I don't think so, right?
No.
That's still a bill. It has not been
still
passed.
A bill.
Yeah, it's still a bill. Yes.
Yeah, as long as it's still a bill, it doesn't mean anything. So don't worry about that. It doesn't mean anything. The last question you have is...
But I don't know, Rajiji, but there was something approved on the 2nd of August, the 1st or 2nd of August, where they passed a bill. I'm not really sure if it's the same one, but it said that the international students
the one that you
sent have to go into the accredited university.
The link that you sent me, and again, any university DSO should be able to tell you that. Because DSOs will keep track of something like that. I don't know. It looks like, let me just take a quick look.
Okay.
See, October 2011, this bill was introduced. In July, it was sent to the Committee of the Whole House. It's still in House. It is not even before the Senate yet.
Senate,
yeah.
Things don't happen that quickly. Okay, if you look at this, it tells you where it's standing. July 12, 2012, it was reported with an amendment committee to the Committee of the Whole House. So it's not even before the whole House yet. Once House approves it, then it goes to the Senate. Then we'll see what happens to it. Okay?
Okay.
So the bill is not something to worry about right now. But you can double check if it's moved that fast, which I doubt very much. I would be amazed if this moved that fast, that in from July to September they've already approved it. Very unlikely. Okay. The ninth question that you had was, if we have a valid visa, something happens to the university, can we obtain an I-20 from another school and come back with the same visa? You know, we had that issue in Tri-Valley University also. But there the problem was, if you fall out of status for even one day, you should not be using that visa. So, of course, when we come to that situation, we'll talk about it. Three things happened. Three types of outcomes were there when students decided to use the same visa with a new I-20. One, some students were able to make it. No problem. I don't think they should have made it. I think CBP should have turned them away at the border, but they came in anyway. Second category of students was turned away at the airport. Go back. Get a new visa.
Okay.
Third category of students got the worst thing. They were not only turned away, they were given 5 years bar from entering USA. Okay? So it depends upon the circumstances of individual cases. If we get into that situation, okay? Now, coming back to the issue, which issue do you want me to address next? What would you like me to talk about next?
So, Rajiv, one quick question which most of the students are facing right now. They applied for their initial OPTs. It's been a while. So can they go ahead, take the info pass, and then request for this interim EAD?
I would say as long as the university is not decertified, every student should be able to do what they would be able to do with any other university.
Okay.
What is the next question?
Well, I think from my end, this is what I have. Probably if you want to talk to any other students, you know.
No, wait. What I want you to do is two things. Send me a letter for ICE and send me a list of things you would like us to discuss with David.
Sure. Yes, I've got both of them written here.
Okay, and then we'll take it from there.
Okay. Sounds good.
Now, today I don't have time to talk with all students individually. Does anybody have something they want me to talk about very urgently? There's one question somebody had posted, Kiran007. I want to answer that question. My wife was a student of Harguan University. She's currently on OPT, valid until March 2014. What will happen if her OPT is terminated before we get the ESC receipt number for change of status for H-1? See, all of this is irrelevant because it's not going to happen. And once you file the H-4 within the life of her current OPT, I don't think you have a problem. Okay? So, really, Kiran, you don't need to worry. This looks like a simple enough situation where when you filed for her H-4, she was still on OPT. No question, she should be able to get her H-4 within you. Okay? Now, that said...
So, Rajit, you've got a quick question once you've done
yes.
this.
Go ahead, please.
Yeah. So, for example, you know, we get the same notice from ICE saying that, you know, the service has been terminated. And some of them wants to go on to their H-4, you know, if they have that option. How does it work if they do not have a valid visa?
As long as they have valid status, which means...
Right.
Either attending classes or have OPT or CPT, they should be able to change status within USA as long as they filed their application for change of status within the life of their
okay. passport. And do they have to go out of the country in any way?
They shouldn't have to, not in those cases.
Okay, even if they do not have a visa. I mean, even if they do not have a valid visa.
No, the only kind of people that I'm concerned about are those where the university has been blamed for issuing faulty CPTs. If you look at the notice that they have sent, I sent to the university for decertification, they gave five or six typical examples. How can you approve CPT as well as full-time classes for somebody who's living in California? Or living in Michigan, attending classes in California, how is that possible? Okay. So it becomes quite, you know, those are the kind of cases where they could consider that even though you have OPT or CPT, you are out of status. Then they'll make you go outside for a visa stamp. So people who have been attending classes or have valid OPTs, CPTs, they should be okay.
Okay. And Rajiv, I've got a very peculiar question this morning from one of the students, if you could really help me out here. He said, you know, this guy, he's from Oregon University, and he's got his H-1 RSE asking him for his attendance records. And he did not take his CPT any time. He's on his OPT, you know, so he did not take any CPTs yet. He attended all the classes. But when he reached out to the university officials, they were told him that, you know, his records are not available. And that's what they sent him, saying that, you know, they do not have his records in the university.
I think a couple of things...
So where can he go by?
A couple of things. I think he should give an affidavit about what he's done, all the efforts he's made. There are two things going on here that I can think of. ICE, through USCIS, wants to get the information they need to make a criminal case against Mr. Yan or Wang, okay? Mr. Wang's lawyers, if we were the lawyers for Mr. Wang representing him in criminal defense, we would tell him, don't give anything to anybody.
Okay, I understand now.
Until you're obliged to, don't give anything to anybody. Again, I'm making a guess here. I don't know exactly what happened. But what I'm thinking is there are two parties, the university and Mr. Wang on one side, and ICE on the other side, they're both trying to pull information about creating or defending a criminal case. That, I think, is what's going on. What does he do? Our student, what he does is he writes an affidavit in detail, trying, putting down all his efforts of what he tried to do. Then he gives secondary evidence, which is his affidavit, I attended classes. If he has copies of receipts of textbooks and all, he gives those. Anything else that shows that he was attending classes. For example, if other class fellows can give him an affidavit that he was attending classes with us, he can give that too.
Okay. So, Rajiv, can he get in touch with you, you know, probably for a fee or something? I'm not really sure how you want to take this.
I don't like to charge people who are in trouble. I like to keep it as I'm doing it because I want to help you guys. I would prefer that he join us in a community conference. But if people
want money, he's on the conference right now,
and they can afford to pay for it, tell him to send me an email. I'll be happy to set up a call for him.
Okay. So people who are on RFE and you know, they have this cab gap, is it valid only until the 1st of October, or is it valid until they got their case has been approved or declined?
I think it's valid only till 1st October. But ICE has a frequently asked question on it on their website. You can take a look at that.
Okay. So they can stay in the legal in the country legally,
they
but they cannot
stay,
work after 1st
cannot
of
work
October.
Past October 1st, yes.
Okay. Understand.
Okay, again, I am not 100% sure, but I think that's the way it works.
Okay.
Okay.
So I think that's all I have, Rajiv, for you.
There are two items outstanding from you. Agenda of what we want to talk with David about. Get together with all the students. Think about everything you want to ask. I'll be happy to put him on a conference call. I can ask them if they want to participate. Otherwise, I can talk to him one-on-one and brief you guys.
Sure. Also, Rajiji, just a note, I have seen the reply what attorney has sent out to ICE reply.
Right.
So I would talk to you probably, you know, sometime later on this. Or, you know, if possible, I'll see what else I can do on this.
Send me an email.
Because this is not available to public, so I really don't want to take it to the next level.
That's fine. Send me an email with your phone numbers and all, and I'll give you a call back, okay? Now, guys,
all right, Rajiji.
Before we terminate this call, first thing I want to do is see if any students here have any urgent issues that need attention right away and cannot wait to come through, you know, a collective question-answer session. I want you to keep sending questions to either one of these folks who are corresponding with me. I think that would be the best way to do it, and we can do another call whenever necessary. I can do a call every 2 days or every day if I have to. For TVU, we were doing a call every day for a couple of months. I remember doing a call almost every day. I think it was every day, actually. Then we reduced it to once a week. Then we reduced it to once a month because things were where they were. So that's the same thing we'll do. Whatever time you need, I will give you and you know, until we got this thing resolved. But right now, there doesn't appear to be any emergency. Not so far. Okay. Only those people who have an emergency situation which can't wait, press 5-star on your phone.
Students, please, if you have only, you know, something really urgent, and if you think your answers have been not, your questions have been not answered, and you think, you know, this is really something what you're facing, please ask the question now. Please do not waste the time of Rajiv. This is already
been
2 hours.
No, that's not the problem. I've been talking nonstop for about an hour and a half now. So,
yeah, but, you know, most of the questions you have definitely answered, sir. So every individual has got their own questions now. But, you know, I'm pretty much sure that, you know, you have answered most of the questions. So I want
only
those
one,
people who are
one,
really in need.
One person with outstanding issue, area code 408. Go ahead, please.
Hello, can you hear me?
I can hear you, yes, sir.
Hello, sir. This is Ashok. We appreciate your efforts. I had a lot of questions from different students. There is one general question. Now that university's attorney, he's concerned that it will go back and forth and they will come back for an appeal and only then something will happen. So the students are in a dilemma. Like now, there are not many questions which have answered.
Ashok ji, you faded out.
Sorry?
Hello, Ashok?
Yes, sir.
I think
you have to keep the mouthpiece near your mouth.
Yeah, no, the students, they are actually in a dilemma. They are trying to know what is the timeline. Obviously, there is no timeline from what could happen next. So they are trying to think if they can still stick with the university for a while, at least until the admissions are open for all the other colleges. Or they wanted to know if whatever the school's attorney had said, that the ICE would come back for an appeal, only then something would happen. Until then, everyone would be in status. So is this true?
It appears to me, as I said earlier, that normally they have to wait for the appeal process to complete, which in normal course of process should take several months. I don't know how long. It all depends. But where there are criminal allegations levied, they can short-circuit the process and take away the certification even before the appeal. But then the university always has the option of filing a TRO again. Okay? So, don't really know how long. Can't really predict that. Nobody can. But it does appear that it's not going to happen overnight, hopefully.
Yes.
Okay? So, unfortunately, I don't have a good answer. My only answer is it does not appear to be an emergency right now. They can short-circuit the process, but normally it takes several months. That would be my guess. Okay?
So from what I understand, for the next several months, they would not come back for an appeal or will not ask our school's attorney to come back for an appeal, right?
Well, the way it works is ICE can make a decision saying, okay, we are withdrawing your I-17. You can no longer do any of the things that a normal school would be able to do. And then, like they did the last time, ICE will post a notice saying you've got 7 days or 14 days to either change status or leave USA or go to another school. So we are trying to forestall that by sending a letter to ICE saying, guys, be reasonable. How can I find a new school and transfer in 2 weeks? Okay? You are hurting us for faults, if there are any faults, by the university. You can't do that. You're putting us in the same place where no good school will take us midstream and nobody's going to take us in 2 weeks. It's a process. So we need to write this to USCIS. To ICE, USICE. So,
one more thing, sir. What university attorneys have been telling us is that they will not. I mean, like you said, they might post again, but university attorneys have been telling us that this time they will not post any such message on the website. They, meaning ICE, will not post any such message without asking for an appeal back to the school's attorney. Is this true?
Yes, unless they have an agreement in writing with ICE, I will not believe that.
Okay, so I guess we have an understanding that they have to do it. They do have an agreement in place in that way, I guess.
I haven't seen it. Unless there is an agreement and I see it myself, I will not believe it.
So this is another question that we should be asking David if you are going back to him or if you are talking to him again.
Absolutely.
That's all I have, sir. Thank you.
Yes, sir. I am not... Look, see, as lawyers, we sometimes have to ask very uncomfortable questions from people. I have no problem doing it. My job is to take care of the people I've decided to take care of. My job is not to be politically correct. My job is not to be pleasant. I can be very unpleasant if I have to be. I try not to be. But if we have to, we have to. You know, these are hard questions that need to be answered. Just because I said so, they're not going to follow it through. ICE is not bound by any promises they make unless they are in writing. And not only should they be in writing, they should be in writing committed by somebody who's authorized to bind the whole agency, or at least one part of the agency, not just a low-level officer who says, oh, okay, we won't publish this notice again. They have no power. Okay? So bear this in mind. If there is an agreement, and there might well be, I would love to see that. If there's an agreement, that we all can go, poof, good. Now we can relax.
I think in one of his replies, he
made this point, Rajivji, saying that, you know, they should not simply go ahead and terminate. There should be a conference call, you know, or at least, you know, a meeting between the, both the parties before they could do something.
Should is the word that I don't like.
Okay.
I want to see something that says shall. They have no choice. If it's should, yeah, should, everything should, I mean, they should do things. First of all, they should not be giving 2 weeks. Should is a very difficult word to deal with.
Okay. Right. Okay.
The answer to all these...
And I'll try to share the most important points, whatever, you know, he put forward to those questionnaires.
Well, let's just talk with the
so
university.
That you have an idea.
Let's just talk with the university.
Okay.
I would suggest a call with the university, their lawyers, a couple of you guys, somebody from NATA, me, whoever else you think you want to invite, any other lawyers. I have no problem having other lawyers online. We can all talk with, you know, and see what is going on.
Okay. So I'll speak with the university officials and see, you know, if they can give us some time. I'm pretty sure there will be.
Absolutely.
But I'll get a couple of time frames so that, you know, you are comfortable as well over that.
Let's do that. Okay. So
sure.
Let me see. I think we don't have any other questions. Why don't you gentlemen go ahead and get these documents together and run them by both Mahinderji and me, and then we'll decide what to do next. We'll be, of course, we have a tripartite conversation going on at all times. Anytime you need my input, let me know, drop me an email. I'll be right with you. Okay? Mahinderji, did you have any parting words to say to us?
No, I think this is good. I mean, the only thing I would advise all the students is... Rajivji is an expert in this. We from NATA and all other organizations, we all support you, and don't take any desperate actions. Anything urgency, contact Rajivji, or I give my email address, send an email, we'll try to help you out. But make a right decision properly, and also look for a proper career for all of you. I mean, try to have good plans. Even irrespective of this, something happens to this university again after 3 months and they start stopping. So try to see if any other alternative plans also can be planned. If you know somebody or if you have relatives, work with them. But any issues, come back to us and don't make any hasty decisions without consulting Rajiv. And from NATA side, you can always reach me through my email address.
Absolutely.
Thank you, guys.
I'm not the only lawyer
sure,
in the country. There are plenty of good lawyers here. My only concern is, last time during TVU time, what we disliked was that a lot of lawyers saw this as an opportunity to make money and nothing else. I have no problem with people making money. I have a problem with people making money to the exclusive, let me rephrase that, people making money not realizing what is in the best interest of the students. For example, if somebody contacted me and said, look, I have been out of status for 6 months, I did not attend classes, and ICE has said, either I can take voluntary departure or they will put me in proceedings, et cetera, et cetera. What should I do? My answer was, take voluntary departure. Why are you sitting around? Why are you hiring a lawyer? There is no need. Because ultimately you have nothing to argue. You never attended classes.
So there is something happens to the university, sir, Rajivji.
Hang on.
An individual case here?
Hang on. My point is,
okay,
every lawyer who is looking out for your best interest should be advising you in that way. Instead of saying, let's file this, let's file that, they should look at the merits. Of course, nobody is God, but give you a good professional opinion that does not factor into its calculations how much money we are going to make. It should be what is in the best interest of the student. That's
right.
Important. If you can get lawyers like that on your side, perfect. That's what I want for you. Go ahead, please. Right, go ahead.
Mr. Rajivji, my quick question was, if something happens to the university, and then do we have any individual cases here to fight?
Do we have any individual cases we have to file? Let's talk with David. Let's talk with the university. Let's see what's going on. I don't see how we can file a lawsuit against the government, what standing we have, what is our cause of action. I really don't see anything here. We may have a cause of action as far as getting some extra time is concerned, but even that's a matter of discretion. Courts are not likely to interfere with something like that, but it doesn't hurt. Fortunately, you are in a circuit which is very kind to immigration issues, which is Ninth Circuit, California. So hopefully, I mean, I wouldn't want to do some of this in Washington, D.C., but Ninth Circuit is more kind to immigration issues. So certainly, if there is something we can do, and whoever wants to file this on behalf of the students, they make sense, we would want to follow them, no question.
But Rajuji, already there is a history of Tri-Valley and Northern Virginia and all, where they will give time for the students to, I mean, this is very absurd, like within 1 week, but typically last time, they gave enough time for the students to move to other universities.
Not for
so,
TVU. Mahindraji, not for TVU. They did not give even 1 day space period.
No, after V period. Initially, they didn't. There was a lot of hoopla. But later on, I think they started realizing the pressure from every Lincoln corner.
TVU issues were very poorly handled. Very, very poorly handled.
I know.
They're still suffering from the fallout of TVU issues. The only case they handled well was one organization they closed in Pennsylvania, where they gave students, I think, 3 months' notice. Every other case, they have messed up royally.
So let us see at the time what comes up. But you know.
Yeah, we have all this information. We'll make it available to ICE. But let these ladies and gentlemen get this information to me, and then I can have somebody that I can work with and get it out to ICE after final approval from everybody.
Sure, Rajiv.
Okay.
So Rajiv, to brief it down, I will send you a letter. Which, you know, you can change accordingly and put it on your letterhead, which will be sent out to ICE. And then our concerns to the attorney, our university attorney, which, you know, where you can talk to him on those issues.
Exactly. That's what we are. That's what we intend to do.
Okay.
Okay? Sure.
Very
sir. Good.
Thank and, you. Rajiv, do you mind? I'm really, really thankful for you, you know, your time. I don't know, you know, how grateful we are. Because, you know, a lot of students, as you can understand, you know, they are going through a lot of issues here, and your time is very much valuable for us, sir. Thank you. Thank you very much. You know, I have no words to say anymore.
Thank you, everyone.
No problem, guys. Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, guys. Bye.
Bye-bye.